Paramahamsa Parikadakacharya Astotra Sipati Sumad Bhakti Vidanta Swami Prabhupada Kijaya. Iskand Samstrapakacharya Srila Prabhupada Kijaya. Jaya Vishnupai Paramahamsa Parikadakacharya Astotra Sipati Sumad Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Goswami Prabhupada Kijaya. Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Premise Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srila Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vinda Ki Jai. Shishi Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Sham Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Gaur Dhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Navadweep Dham Ki Jai. Yamuna Mayi Ki Jai, Ganga Mayi Ki Jai, Tulsi Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Samveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Nitai Gaur Premanande Vrindavo. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, Gaur Premanande. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chapter 22, Prithu Maharaja's meeting with the Kumaras. Text 36. Pare vare cha ye bhava gunavyati karat anu natesham vidyate kshemam isha vidvam sitadisham. Translation. We accept as blessings different states of higher life, distinguishing them from lower states of life. But we should know that such distinctions exist only in relation to the interchange of the modes of material nature. Actually, these states of life have no permanent existence, for all of them will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller. We continue the purport. Regulated human civilization promotes dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. In human society, there must be religion. Without religion, human society is only animal society. Economic development and sense gratification must be based on religious principles. When religion, economic development, and sense gratification are adjusted, liberation from this material birth, death, old age, and disease is assured. In the present age of Kali, however, there is no question of religion and liberation. People have taken interest only in economic development and sense gratification. Therefore, despite sufficient economic development all over the world, dealings in human society have become almost animalistic. When everything becomes grossly animalistic, dissolution takes place. This dissolution is to be accepted as Isha Vidvam Sitashisam. The Lord's so-called blessings of economic development and sense gratification will be conclusively dissolved by destruction at the end of this Kali Yuga. The Lord will appear as the incarnation of Kalki, and his only business will be to kill all human beings on the surface of the globe. After that killing, another golden age will begin. We should therefore know that our material activities are just like childish play. Children may play on the beach, and the father will sit and watch this childish play, the construction of buildings with sand, the construction of walls, and so many things. But finally, the father will ask the children to come home. Then everything is destroyed. Persons who are too much addicted to the childish activities of economic development and sense gratification are sometimes especially favored by the Lord when he destroys their construction of these things. So there are many paragraphs to the purport, so I'll just comment on the one we just read. Earlier, the Kumaras had mentioned the four principles of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, and said that of all of them, Moksha is most important. But the first principle is Dharma. Dharmenihina Pashubi Samana. Without Dharma, men are simply like animals. And Srila Prabhupada often said that animalistic men are worse than animals, because at least animals live according to natural laws, whereas men without Dharma become less than animals, killing their own children in the womb and so on, which animals don't do. So without religiousness, men are like animals and they become worse than animals. And thus, the Lord destroys all that they have accumulated by economic development for sense gratification without religiousness, what to speak of any thought of liberation. Srila Prabhupada used to tell the story of Punamusika Bhava. Probably most of you know it, that once there was a mouse who approached a yogi or a sadhu for blessings. He said that I'm being very much harassed by a dog. So the sadhu asked, what do you want? The mouse said, I want to become a dog. So the sadhu blessed him, you become a dog. After some time, the dog came to the sadhu and said, what is it now? Oh, sorry, cat. First he became a cat. And after some time, the cat came to the sadhu, and the sadhu asked, what is it now? He said, I'm being harassed by a dog. So the sadhu blessed the cat. Now you become a dog. After some time, the dog came back to the sergeant. The sadhu asked, what is it now? And the dog replied, I'm being harassed by a tiger. All right, you become a tiger. So the tiger began to look at the sadhu as if he was going to pounce on him and devour him. And the sadhu could see the look in the tiger's eye, so he cursed him. Purna Musika Bhava. Again you become a monster. Srila Prabhupada has compared the modern godless civilization to the mouse. By the blessings of God, people have become more and more opulent. And in their opulence, not only are they forgetting God, but they are deliberately challenging God and defying God. So God is allowing them to continue for some time, but when the time comes, He will punish them, and Punar Musika Bhava, again, they will become like mice. Their whole materialistic civilization will be destroyed. But Srila Prabhupada applied the same principle to his own disciples. Perhaps in 1975, Srila Prabhupada was very ill in Vrindavan. He had a high fever and was in great pain. And at one stage he commented that that he was suffering for the sins of his disciples. And of course we usually think in terms of the basic sins of eating meat, taking intoxicants, indulging in illicit sex, or intoxicants, gambling. But Srila Prabhupada said that because his disciples weren't getting up early and attending the morning program, he was suffering. And then he went further to the point that he felt his disciples were sort of trying to take his position, trying to take control of the movement from him. And then he told the same story, Purna Musika Bhava. And Ramananda Prabhu was with Srila Prabhupada at the time, and Srila Prabhupada asked him, you know, the idea is that by the blessings of the spiritual master, one's position is enhanced, like from a mouse one becomes a cat, then a dog, then a tiger. But then if one thinks that I can, you know, devour my spiritual master or take the place of my spiritual master, then what? Prabhupada asked Ramananda Prabhu. Ramananda Prabhu said then he becomes a mouse again. Srila Prabhupada said, no, he's already a mouse. Just by having the thought that one can take the place of one's spiritual master, one is already a mouse. So Srila Prabhupada often criticized the materialists, and he would encourage us by addressing us almost as pure devotees. He actually did see the best in us. And he also encouraged us by speaking to the best in us. But the same tendencies that exist in ordinary materialistic people also exist in us. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada would let us know that the same tendencies that ordinary materialists have are also present in us. And if we're not careful, the same types of punishment they get will also come to us. And therefore we should always be humble. Humility is one of the most important qualifications for spiritual progress. Once one disciple asked Srila Prabhupada that Lord Chaitanya wrote only the 8 verses of Shikshastakam, which contains the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness, yet the principle of the spiritual master is so important in Krishna consciousness. Where is the spiritual master in the Shikshastakam? And Srila Prabhupada replied, the spiritual master is there. Junadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishuna amanina manadena kirtanya sadahari. That if one is actually humble, then he will seek shelter and guidance from a Vaishnava, pure devotee. And therefore, spiritual master is also there. So, humility is essential for spiritual progress. And just as ordinary materialists become puffed up with their success and opulence, devotees, because we're still subject to the material modes of nature, we can also become puffed up. And therefore we should always be very careful and prayerful. Once Srila Prabhupada gave a class at Bhaktivedanta Manor, and he said the difference between you and me is that you can fall down at any time and I cannot. After the class, Srila Prabhupada came forward to the deities and was praying to them. And one disciple asked Srila Prabhupada, what were you praying? And Srila Prabhupada replied, I was praying to the deities that I may never fall down. The disciple said, but Srila Prabhupada, you just said you can never fall down. Srila Prabhupada said, yes, because I'm always praying that I may never fall down. I can never fall down. So we have to be humble and always take shelter, because we are very tiny, we're very insignificant, and at any time we can be swept away by Maya. And therefore we always have to cling to the lotus feet of the spiritual master and pray to the deities to protect us, and keep us always under their shelter. I'll continue the purport. It is said by the Lord, Yasyaham anugrinami harishye tadanam shanai. The Lord told Yudhisthira Maharaj that his special favor is shown to his devotees when he takes away all the devotees' material opulences. Generally, therefore, it is experienced that Vaishnavas are not very opulent in the material sense. when a Vaishnav, pure devotee, tries to be materially opulent and at the same time desires to serve the Supreme Lord, his devotional service is checked. The Lord, in order to show him special favor, destroys his so-called economic development and material opulences. Thus, the devotee, being frustrated in his repeated attempts at economic development, ultimately takes solid shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord. This kind of action may also be accepted as Isha Vidvam Sitashisham, whereby the Lord destroys one's material opulences, but enriches one in spiritual understanding. So in the previous paragraph, Srila Prabhupada explained that when the human society becomes animalistic without religiousness, or less than animals, we come to the end of Kali Yuga, and Kalki comes and kills everyone. And thus, the Lord, the Supreme Controller, destroys. But the same phrase, Isha Vidvam Sitashisham, can be applied in an individual devotee's life. That if he wants to serve the Lord, but at the same time is attached to material things that obstruct his service, the Lord will take away or destroy the material objects of attachment. And Srila Prabhupada related the same verse for the same principle to his own life. Srila Prabhupada said that one astrologer predicted that he would become the richest man in India. And, you know, he was a bright young man, and he appeared to have a brilliant future. At a young age, he became the manager of Dr. Bose's chemical factory in Calcutta. And eventually he started his own pharmaceutical business. But as we know, he met his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and his Guru Maharaj instructed him to preach. So as Srila Prabhupada explains, that because of his, and he was thinking that he will make money and then he can use the money to preach. But eventually his business started to have problems, and even his home life became disturbed. And Srila Prabhupada was wondering, what's happening? So many reversals. Once when he was away, his own servants pillaged his possessions. They ransacked his office and stole his property. And then with his wife also, Srila Prabhupada wanted to preach, but she wasn't in the mood to cooperate. So there was strife at home. And I can imagine that it generally happens when the husband is unable to earn well the family members. Not always, but in some cases they don't appreciate the husband or the father as much. So Srila Prabhupada was wondering, what's happening? And then he came across the verse. from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Yasya Aham Anugrahami Harishyeta Dhanam Shanai. We thought maybe this is happening to me, that Krishna has taken away my opulence. And probably we know the story that his business became more and more problematic, his relationship with his wife became more and more problematic, and once when Srila Prabhupada was away, his wife pawned his Srimad Bhagavatam to get money to buy tea biscuits. So Srila Prabhupada came back and he was very distressed, and he said, now you have to choose, you know, me or tea. And she replied, well, I'll take tea, of course. Maybe she didn't think he was so serious, but he somehow took the situation very seriously, and he left home. So the Lord will help the devotee who wants to serve the Lord, who wants to preach, but at the same time he has material attachments that are holding him back by removing his attachments, or I should say by taking away the objects of his attachments. And we know the history, how Srila Prabhupada struggled in poverty, you could say, although spiritually he was certainly enriched, but he struggled in India. Here I think of the movie of A Lifetime in Preparation done by some devotees in Bombay. It's a beautiful film. And the last sequence of the film, Srila Prabhupada boards the Jaladuta, and it's really very nicely done. The music is very stirring, and Srila Prabhupada is like looking at, as the boat is leaving the harbor, he's looking back and remembering how much he had suffered, how much he had struggled, and how much he had suffered in India. And then he's thinking ahead to the future when he arrives in America, and imagining how much he'll have to suffer there. So it's actually a very poignant conclusion. And yeah, so that, we know that period. And I suppose most of the devotees here would have seen some of the early films of Srila Prabhupada in America. I remember one nice devotee in Bombay, Krishna Chandra Prabhu. He once said that he felt everyone should see those films. There were filmmakers that made documentaries of Srila Prabhupada and the devotees in the early days. There's one, Happiness on Second Avenue. And anyway, Krishna Chandra Prabhu said that, you know, you cannot really grasp what Srila Prabhupada went through, what he did, who he had to deal with, until you see the films of him and the hippies, and transforming the hippies into Vaishnavas. But anyway, so later he thanked the Lord. You know, he thanked the Lord. But if we don't always do that immediately. In fact, we usually struggle. Like, the Lord will destroy what we have, then we'll try to rebuild it. Then he'll destroy it again. We try to rebuild it. Destroy it again. We try to rebuild it. Then finally, like when everything else fails, we decide, okay, we'll surrender. Which is good. So this kind of action may also be accepted as Isha Vidvam Sitashisam, whereby the Lord destroys one's material opulences, but enriches one in spiritual understanding. In the course of our preaching work, we sometimes see that materialistic persons come to us and offer their obeisances to take blessings, which means they want more and more material opulences, like the mouse, just like the mouse. If such material opulences are checked, such persons are no longer interested in offering obeisances to the devotees. Such materialistic persons are always concerned about their economic development. They offer obeisances to saintly persons or the Supreme Lord and give something in charity for preaching work, with a view that they will be rewarded with further economic development. I remember the first really rich man I met when I began to make life members in Calcutta. His name was, I forget his first name, but his last name was Tikmani, and he was a Marwari. And he owned a big steel mill. And, you know, I was new to India and I was young and I'd never met such a rich man. And, although he had a very big house, he had like a little temple room. And he showed me his wife. She was sitting in the temple room, chanting japa in front of their deities in the little room. And he said, "This is why I'm so rich. Because my wife does puja and chants mantras all day long. I go out and do business, but this is the real reason I'm rich." So, but that's good. That's human, that our economic development is based on religiousness. But still, the idea is to become rich and enjoy, but within religious principles. And that is human life or pious life. But transcendental life is something different. Transcendental life means that we give up everything for the service of the Lord. Like the gopis, you know, they were ready to give up their families, their, you know, their children, their households, even their chastity. Of course, now, you know, chastity doesn't have much value, especially in the West. And the idea of the West is spreading almost everywhere. But for a pious girl, her chastity is everything. You know, without her chastity, she's finished. She's nothing. But the gopis were ready to give up everything for the sake of Krishna. When Krishna played upon his flute, and the sound of the flute entered their ears, they became stunned and they just rushed to Krishna. And the acharyas explain that the sound of the song of Krishna's flute is not just a musical vibration. Of course it is a musical vibration, but it also conveys a message. In fact, Krishna has different messengers that carry his messages. And one of his messengers is his flute. So the message that the gopis got when they heard the flute song of Krishna was that he needs them, he wants them. So they rushed to him, not to fulfill their selfish desires, but they rushed to him because they got the message that, you know, he needs us, he wants us. So they went for his sake, to satisfy him. So that is transcendental. That is beyond material piety. And that is what we aspire for. Not to be pious and live comfortably and happily in the world until everything is destroyed. Ultimately, the body will be destroyed. But to just give up everything to serve the Lord. As Srila Prabhupada did. So, but ordinary people, they offer obeisances to saintly persons or the Supreme Lord and give something in charity for preaching work with a view that they will be rewarded for further economic development. I thought Mr. Chikmani was impressed by my preaching. Maybe he just thought his donation would help him prosper more. However, when one is sincere in his devotional service, the Lord obliges the devotee to give up his material development and completely surrender unto him. Because the Lord does not give blessings of material opulence to his devotee, people are afraid of worshipping Lord Vishnu because they see that the Vaishnavas, who are worshippers of Lord Vishnu, are poor in superficial material opulences. Such materialistic persons, however, get immense opportunity for economic development by worshipping Lord Shiva. For Lord Shiva is the husband of the goddess Durga, the proprietor of this universe. By the grace of Lord Shiva, a devotee gets the opportunity to be blessed by the goddess Durga. Ravana, for example, was a great worshipper and devotee of Lord Shiva, and in return he got all the blessings of goddess Durga. So much so that his whole kingdom was constructed of golden buildings. In Brazil, in this present age, huge quantities of gold have been found, and from historical references in the Puranas, we can guess safely that this was Ravana's kingdom. This kingdom was, however, destroyed by Lord Ramachandra. By studying such incidents, we can understand the full meaning of Isha Vidvam Sita Shisham. So the same phrase Srila Prabhupada is applying in different circumstances. In the general circumstance, the whole universe will be destroyed. In a more limited context, when the society becomes godless and the people become animalistic, planet will be destroyed, or the opulence of the planet will be destroyed, and Satva Yuga will begin. In the case of the devotee who is attached to material opulence, the Lord will destroy his opulence but enrich him spiritually. And in the case of the demon, like Ravana, the Lord will destroy his opulence. But he won't be like the devotee who takes the opportunity to serve the Lord, but he'll just suffer the punishment. The Lord does not bestow material blessings upon the devotees. for they may be trapped again in this material world by continuous birth, death, old age, and disease. Due to materialistic opulence, as persons like Ravana become puffed up for sense gratification. Ravana even dared kidnap Sita, who is both the wife of Lord Ramachandra and the goddess of fortune, thinking that he would be able to enjoy the pleasure potency of the Lord. But actually, by such action, Ravana became Vidvamsita, or ruined. At the present moment, human civilization is too much attached to economic development and sense gratification, and is therefore nearing the path of ruination. So, when we read such verses, we may become a little depressed, because within our hearts, we actually want to be Krishna conscious, but we don't want to be poor. So I must balance the presentation here by citing this, Srila Prabhupada or Bali Maharaj. We'll begin with Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj was very opulent, as you know, and Vamanadeva took everything away from him. And Bali Maharaj surrendered to the Lord. But after he surrendered to the Lord rewarded him with his own planet and with the Lord's own personal association. And Srila Prabhupada, we hear the same story, how Krishna took everything away from him. But then later he became practically the most opulent person in the world. Later Srila Prabhupada commented that the Lord has 10 hands. I think it may be some saying, Bengali saying, but anyway. The Lord has 10 hands. And with his 10 hands, if he wants to take everything away from you, how much can you hold on to with your 2 hands? And similarly, the Lord with his 10 hands, if he wants to bestow rewards upon you, how much can you take with your 2 hands? So Srila Prabhupada said that at first Krishna tested him by taking everything away from him. But then later Krishna tested him by giving everything to him. And of course Srila Prabhupada was able to pass both tests. And he is our acharya. So Srila Prabhupada does comment that yes, it is the Lord's special favor on a more immature devotee to take away the devotee's opulence. But it's an even greater favor upon a purified devotee or a more mature devotee that the Lord bestows opulence upon him, because he knows the devotee will use the opulence in the Lord's service and not become distracted or diverted. So that's basically Srila Prabhupada's legacy, that he was able to engage everything in the service of the Lord, and the Lord kept giving him more and more to engage. But we're not as strong as Srila Prabhupada was, or at least let us say, if we're not as strong as Srila Prabhupada was, and we're not, we have to be careful. And if we try to hold on to material things, not for the Lord's service, but for personal sense gratification, the Lord may take them away. But that's also good, because then we can start all over again. Surrender to the Lord with utmost sincerity. Anyway, we don't have so much time. Otherwise, I could tell some good stories about Shaivites in India, but we'll have to end. Well, first, maybe I'll tell a little conversation with Srila Prabhupada, because it's significant. On Juhu Beach, on a morning walk, one disciple brought up the question of Lord Rama praying to Lord Shiva at Rameshwara. And the devotee mentioned the idea that some people say that because Ravana was a devotee of Shiva, that Ram wanted to take Shiva's permission before killing Ravana. So Srila Prabhupada said that the people who propagate such story are actually suggesting that Lord Shiva is a rascal, that he doesn't give protection to his devotee. He said, yeah, it's as if they're saying, Ram is saying, Shiva, I want to kill your devotee. Oh yes, you can kill my devotee. So then, you know, who will take shelter of Lord Shiva? You know, he lets people kill his devotees. What kind of protection does he give? So, that was one point. And Srila Prabhupada said that when Ravana was fighting with Ram, Parvati approached Lord Shiva and said, you know, your Ravan is your great devotee, he's in difficulty. He's praying to you, he's calling for you, you should help him. And Lord Shiva replied that when Lord Ramchandra wants to kill him, what can I do to save him? Now his end will come. So the fact is that we may take shelter even of the most powerful of the demigods, Lord Shiva, but if we offend the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will be vanquished, and even Lord Shiva won't be able to protect us. I guess a small anecdote. There are many movie producers and film artists in the Juhu scheme near the Juhu temple. And one was Ramanand Sagar. He became a life member early, and he went to America and visited some of the temples, and when he came back to India, he was so impressed. I mean, he was telling everyone how wonderful our temples were and how wonderful our movement was. And he may even have met Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles. So he invited me to his house, and I was expecting to see a Krishna Bhakta's house, but he was a Shaivite. Well, I don't even know if he was a Shaivite, but he might have, you know, later he did the series on Krishna, and maybe he wasn't a Shaivite, but he was just worshipping Shiva for material opulence. And he was very materially opulent. And his next door neighbor was J. Om Prakash, was another movie producer. And so I went there, and he had like a huge Shiva linga right in the entrance.
Paul. I mean, it was like, I don't know what standard they follow, but he was really into worshiping Lord Shiva. So I think people know, you know, Mahaprabhu Das, on the other hand, our devotee Mahaprabhu Das from Bombay, used to say that he would preach to people, they would be convinced of the philosophy, but they would be afraid to begin Krishna consciousness because they thought they would lose their material edge. And he said they knew it's a one-way street. Like once you start going down, you can't turn back. So he said they were actually afraid. But one sort of nice little story. We were in Madras with Srila Prabhupada, and a rich man was sort of having a program at his house because he had built a temple, like a nice temple room, in his new house. And he invited Srila Prabhupada and the devotees, and the main deity was Lord Shiva. So it was a nice temple room, it was all marble, but there were a lot of guests, and Srila Prabhupada and the other dignitaries went into the temple room, and we were sort of standing outside the doorway. And then the host distributed flower petals to all the visitors, and then at the end of the ceremony, they all offered their flower petals to the Shiva Linga. So we couldn't actually see Srila Prabhupada from where we were standing. But afterwards we walked in, and we weren't sure what he would do. Afterwards we walked in, and then we knew what Srila Prabhupada did, because in the corner there was a little deity of Krishna. And there we saw Srila Prabhupada's palm full of flower petals. So how Srila Prabhupada preached to people, how he engaged them, at the same time set the example for us, is a miracle. It's a miracle. Yes, Hare Krishna.
Since you are talking about Lord Shiva, I remember when I went to see the youngest son of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Nilalita Prasad Thakur.
Yes.
Brother of
Yes.
In their house they had 12 Shivalingas, but as you can see, they do not know. I don't know what they can see. 12 Shivalingas. So I had asked him this question, that Prabhu, why being Vaishnava you have so many Shivalingas at your home? He says, generally the householders, they tend to commit many offenses to Radha Krishna deities. So we just been worshipping Lord Shiva for forgiveness and to be free from offenses. That is why mostly we have Shivalingas in Bengal or the Gaudiya Vaishnavas places.
Interesting. Did everyone hear the Thai Chan Prabhu's statement? Very good. Well, and of course in Vrindavan we have Gopeshwar Mahadev, and he helps us in our mood of service to Radha and Krishna. So certainly there, Lord Shiva is Kshetrapal, he's the protector of the Tham. So in Navadvip, the devotees first offer obeisances to Lord Shiva before they do their Navadvipa parikrama. Yes, Mahatma Prabhu.
One question, an observation, I suppose, but the Prabhupada said if we worship Lord Shiva, we can, one would become wealthy. And we see in many poor countries people worship Lord Shiva and they're getting poor. America, which is the great economic power of the world, and many wealthy people, none of whom are worshiping Lord Shiva, to my knowledge, or very few. That's one part of the question. And the other part of the question is, if it is one's karma to be poor, can that change by worshiping Lord Shiva or any other country?
As far as the first question, if I may rephrase it, that America's economically powerful, but people here don't generally worship Lord Shiva. So I guess the implication is how could they be so wealthy? And on a morning walk at Juhu Beach, someone asked Shiva Prabhupada that in America they kill so many cows, they engage in so many sinful activities, you know, intoxication, illicit sex, gambling. So how is it that America could be so opulent? And Srila Prabhupada said that America is opulent because it gives so much in charity and foreign aid. He said if America stopped giving foreign aid, they would become poor. Yeah. Yeah. Well, according to some survey I read, India. No, that's another thing about In God We Trust. But that it. I mean, America was founded on religious principles, and according to. Sorry. Yeah. I read a survey. I don't know who conducted it, but a survey of how religious the people are, how faithful they are, and America and India were one and two.
Yeah.
And what was the second?
Many, like for example, Mauritius, which has always been a poor country, people have always worshipped Lord Shiva, and the only thing that helped it apparently economically was when it industrialized. But it didn't appear that the worship of Lord Shiva was helping them economically. Many people who worship him are still poor. So how do we understand that the worship of Lord Shiva creates wealth?
Oh.
When we don't see it practically happen in the lives of those that worship him.
Oh yeah, and you're saying like if it's their karma to be...
A country becomes wealthy, you could say practically became wealthy because they did A, B, C, and D. It's hard to say it became wealthy because everyone worshipped Lord Shiva, because they've been doing that for hundreds of years and they're still poor. And it was only until they industrialized that they became wealthy. That's part of it. The other part of it is if their karma would be poor, how does it change? And worship of a demigod changed one's karma. That's great. Simple reactions.
What do you think?
Well, you can answer part of the question. Because I was living here in Texas and I was seeing how the Christians preach, I thought perhaps we could adopt that kind of preaching, preach to the Indians, to say, when you die, you know where you're going. Are you sure you're going to heaven? Are you sure by your worship of whoever that you're going to go to heaven? As the Christians say, you have sin, and are you sure you're not going to go to hell? So I started thinking, there's so much demigod worship. Could we preach to the demigod worshippers that the demigods want to absolve you from sin? I thought that would be very effective. Only Christian can. And then when I did the research, I said, well, that's not actually true, because you do become free from sin by worshiping demigods. Of course, you don't go to Krishna Loka. So, perhaps that the implication is that by worshiping Lord Shiva, if it's done properly, you would be absolved from negative karma to create good karma in the way that Lord Shiva would. benedictive, and perhaps people are not worshiping the crowd.
Yes. Keshavardi Maharaj makes a good point that the worship of Lord Shiva is one factor, but there can be many other factors. And we have to see the whole picture. And the supreme controller, Krishna, Ishvara Parama Krishna, is the ultimate factor. And the Bhagavad Gita says there's five factors in every work. But out of all of them, the final or conclusive factor is the super soul, the Krishna. And therefore, sarvadharman prityaja mamekam sharanam vraja. If we really want to be in the best position, we should take shelter of the supreme authority. Like Murjan Prabhu said in class yesterday, it all depends on who you know. So, and in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says if you know him in truth, you're liberated. And that's the real goal of these four, I mean, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, and then beyond that, we enter our eternal service to Krishna, and that's our goal. Okay, Chaitanya Chandra Prabhu, less.
Also, I was just thinking, Lord Shiva is the Vaishnava, the Dashama, he's the best Vaishnava. So I would think that he would actually want those persons worshipping him to come to the conclusion of worshipping Krishna. So, maybe he's thinking like that, but he's not really obligated just to supply wealth that he really ultimately may want to supply them with Krishna Bhakti. So why would he also give everybody wealth?
I was actually thinking about that for Mauritius. In such a small country, they should all just become Krishna conscious. So, saying that because Lord Shiva is a Vaishnav, he ultimately wants everyone to become Vaishnavs, so he may not necessarily give them wealth. If he's acting in that mood of a Vaishnava, not just as a demigod. Granthiraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nitai Gaur Pranam.